Jeff and Eric are best friends, as only two film critics could be. They bonded over movies and the Portland rain. It's the kind of romance only seen on TV. Then one day Jeff had to move away to far off San Diego, where it's sunny every day. Eric had to cry, he said, why, oh why? We have to find a way to make sure our friendship doesn't die. We'll have a long-distance relationship, the kind you see on TV so you know it's legit. We'll watch our movies alone and then we'll meet online. Record ourselves a podcast and everything will be fine. Now we have Movie BS with Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. It's Movie BS. These critics are best friends forever.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Baron Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Baer. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's my co-host, Jeff Baer. Both of us are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and enthusiastic about life and about the show and about movies. Right?
Right.
We are.
I know.
We love everything.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks to oneofus.net for hosting us. And thank you, everyone, who has contributed to the Perpetual Lunch Fund, to which you will find a link at moviebs.com. Now, let's talk about movies. Wanna?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll talk about movies. First of all, Inside Out.
Inside Out. No. It's
the latest from Pixar. Do you remember what the last Pixar movie was? Because I sort of forgot.
It was... Nope. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
What is it?
The last one wasn't it Monsters University 2016?
Yes. Was there Monsters University, then Brave.
Right, Brave
or
before that.
Cars 2.
Brave.
Cars 2, then Brave?
Before, if we're going backwards, Monsters University, Brave in 2012, Cars 2 in 2011. Okay. Because there wasn't one last year. There was not one in 2014. Because we weren't good enough. We didn't deserve one. But now they're like, okay.
We had started to question the wonderful world of Pixar a little too much, and then Pixar was like, "Fine, then you don't get anything. Mm-hmm. You want to complain? Fine.
And so now what
you don't like
done?
The Cars franchise that makes billions worldwide? Fine. Makes little kids happy? Well, then we won't give you anything."
And so now they have come back to put us on our place with Inside Out. Inside Out, which is the cartoon version of that TV series, Herman's Head. Do you remember the show Herman's Head?
Sure. One of the voices was Maggie Simpson. Or one of the people in
the
characters
was Maggie
Simpson.
Lisa Simpson.
Lisa Simpson.
The secretary on the show, but she was not in Herman's Head.
Oh, wait. Wow. That was terrible.
Here's the only reason. I never saw an episode of that show except...
I saw every episode, I think.
Except for the one episode that I went to a live taping of as a high school student. This is the cartoon version of that. Finally, they've adapted it. It's about a little girl named Riley. She's 11, and she and her parents have just moved to San Francisco.
From Minnesota. She was a hockey-playing little girl in Minnesota who loved life.
Just a happy little girl.
Full of joy, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And, inside her head, you probably already know the conceit here. Inside her head, she's got five emotions. Joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust. And... those are the ones that control her. And, of course, they're all little people. Amy Poehler. Is there a better choice for Joy than Amy Poehler?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine a better choice.
No, she's wonderful. I mean, I'm sure Meryl Streep could have done a better job, but...
Acting-wise, maybe. But not at conveying Joy. Yeah.
And, I mean, for that, like, if we're going down the line, like, what voice... doesn't fit perfectly on paper with what emotion they're doing.
Yeah, which
like
is
they're all great choices.
Pixar has always been good at that, at choosing the right voices.
Phyllis Smith is an amazing choice for sadness.
Phyllis from The Office.
Yeah, And Bill Hader can do anything, so he's fear, and that's fine.
Lewis Black for anger, again.
Which is perfect. And Mindy Kaling for disgust, which is also perfect.
Yeah, although it seemed to me that there was not as much use for disgust.
I completely agree.
Also, disgust seems to me not to be a separate emotion, but it seems more like a subdivision of fear and maybe anger. Because disgust is usually it's a fear of different things or unknown things, or you know what I mean. Like it seems to me like a subset of fear as opposed to
Inside
a
Out
separate thing.
From Eric D. Snyder. He gives it an F minus.
No, I'm thinking about the emotions and wondering if everybody would have the same five. The movie sort of suggests that everyone has those same five.
Yes, the movie does suggest that.
So I'm thinking, are those the five basic emotions of humans? I don't know.
I can
tell
you I'm feeling very Mindy Kaling toward you right now.
So what happens? She's 11. She's had a big move. I don't know if you know about like what happens when you're around 11 or so. The brain starts to get mixed up anyhow. Things start to go awry emotion-wise. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think the movie does really well until the part where it doesn't is establish a logical – they're taking these abstract ideas and making them visual in a way that makes sense.
I totally agree. And the more that the movie goes along, the more you kind of see the possibility of a child interpreting the world this way, mm-hmm. with this emotional sense. And like saying goodbye to certain emotions or having things be separate or like black or white. There are no shades of gray for children. Like all
right.
of these things are really wonderfully done in this film, I think.
They've got the five characters, five different emotions who are all different colors, which helps to tell them apart. And then the memories are represented by it feels like it's probably like a bowling ball relative to the size of the mm-hmm. little characters. And those are colored according to what the dominant emotion is. And that's, yeah, they're all one color. But of course, as you get older, your memories start to have more than one emotion attached to them. They start to be changed by other things.
And I mean, there's long-term memories, there's short-term memories, there's core memories. And these are all the things that like, yeah, this makes sense. And Joy's perspective is, I'm in charge here. I can, you know, do the best for Riley. Sometimes everybody else, especially Sadness, there's no place for you.
Right, right.
And again, that just makes, you know, wonderful sense for a child.
Yeah, because and Joy has seniority. Joy was the first thing that was in Riley's head as a baby. Joy is the mm-hmm. first emotion that all babies feel, and then comes Sadness, and then Fear, and the others come along. But Joy is the one that was always there, and so Joy is the one that feels like, hey, this is how we're supposed to be. We're always supposed to be joyful all the time.
Yep. And then guess what happens?
Mm.
Joy and Sadness have to go on a side adventure.
Here's where I have trouble. The movie has done a great job setting up.
I bet we have trouble over the same thing for different reasons. Mm. Like usual.
I guess I will find out here.
Let's find
like
out.
At night, Riley goes to sleep, and they make a reference to like dumping the short-term memory, which is what your brain does. It goes through and stuff you don't need to know from that day, it throws away, and the stuff you need mm-hmm. to know, it stores and all that. Then Joy and Sadness get whooshed out of headquarters.
Seemingly for the first, like obviously
they've
for the
never,
first
yeah, they've never left yeah. headquarters, and now they are in the subconscious. And they have to get back to headquarters because basically what has happened now is that Riley doesn't have Joy or Sadness. Those emotions are just mm-hmm. gone, except that she is kind of sad, but she's more just
well,
sort of
but she translates
feeling,
it more,
feeling
with
more like
the
nothing.
Anger, the disgust,
yeah,
and the fear.
Yeah.
And she so translates.
They have to get back,
to
headquarters, and the obstacles that prevent them from getting back to headquarters. This is where it breaks down for me, because there doesn't seem to be a reason for them. They're represented physically, yeah. like, oh, we have to cross this narrow bridge. We have to catch the train of thought. We have to do these things to get back to headquarters. And I just kept thinking, first of all, why would there be any obstacles at all? Like, if somehow your joy and sadness got flushed out of your consciousness, which, by the way, what does that even mean? Like, what is the real life parallel of that? What would stop those emotions from coming back? Like what? It just seems so arbitrary. The obstacles here just seem too arbitrary, and I can't get past that.
And for me, I think it's the same thing, but ever so slightly different, which is, oh, here are these paths to get back.
Yeah.
Let's keep getting close to them, and then they keep failing. As opposed to, like, if there was a linear line and they were at the end of it, and right. they looked, oh, my gosh, we have to go all the way over there, and this is the path we have to follow, and then we have to keep overcoming obstacles to get there that hopefully are related to the big picture.
Right.
I'm right there with you. And the issue that you're having is very similar to mine, which is, oh, that didn't work. But that doesn't it doesn't translate into anything bigger at the end of the film, at yeah. least from my perspective on one viewing. And maybe there is a plan that is greater that I but I didn't see it. Yeah. It was just kind of like, oh, that didn't work. That didn't work. And now we're here. And thankfully, there's a lot of joy from some of the places that they like go, like abstract
sure,
thought.
Yeah, a lot of it is like a lot of it is fun. It just, especially after the first part being so carefully laid out, where the metaphors
yep.
are made tangible and it all works so well, and then in the second section, the rules seem random and capricious. It seems random, like
yes.
that. Oh, we apparently can't just walk across this bridge, or like when they try to catch the train of thought, which is the one sturdy metaphor in this part of the movie, the train of thought.
yeah.
But then they miss it. Why can't they just take the next one? They just give up on that idea altogether and try something else. And just things like that just seem randomly chosen just as a way to keep them from getting back to headquarters.
I think that one is ever so slightly explained, but barely.
I mean, presumably another train of thought will be along, you know, sometime today.
That's true. But yeah, I
just kept waiting for them to get back to headquarters, kind of impatiently.
It's a journey that I didn't enjoy, but everything else is so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Everything
and
else
that's the weird
on either
part.
Side
like,
of that I really
like,
liked.
Oh, okay. This is going to be a failure. This is going to be a failure. Oh, we're just waiting for them to get back.
Right.
And even with Riley, I think Riley out in her real world has some nice moments too of just like childhood. It was a little odd to me. Like there was one moment that was kind of it felt like a cheap laugh, which was everybody sitting at the family table mm-hmm. and we see mom and dad's perspective as well and mm-hmm. their inner five.
Yeah.
And with that, the dad was very one track in the sense of like, goodness, I hope my business works.
Right.
This is tense.
Right.
And at that dinner, he was just like standard dumb dad. And it was for a cheap laugh and everybody laughed. And I understand that laugh. But at the same point, it was just like, well, come on, have a hint of depth there with that guy. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Just because it was the easy way. And again, it's okay to laugh. I'm not saying that.
It was it was funny. And I mean the mom was a stereotypical mom too.
Yes, that's true. I cried twice.
I cried. I mean, it's hard to measure. I mean, I might have cried once
two separate
for
occasions.
A long time. mostly I think just once, but yeah, for a while.
Yeah.
Mostly near the end.
It does work on that level, and it kept feeling to me like it was ever so close to being the greatness of Pixar.
Yeah, it's just that middle section that conceptually doesn't quite work.
Yeah,
but everything else is so good, and so it feels so authentic and relatable, which is what Pixar has always done well, of making you
yeah.
feel like you can relate to these emotions. And oh man, it just I've got a niece who's 10 and a half, and I'm just thinking about her. Her emotions are gonna start messing with her memories and all that. And oh man.
Well, and for me, it's just that thing of like, man, oh man, all these hours I'm putting in right now with Dylan. Mm-hmm. You know, still, if I disappeared, would he, would he recognize, like, you know, like, it's just that thing of like the influence and the changes and you realize there's no control and blah, blah, blah. They're their own people. I got to deal with all that in the future. So yeah, there's some sweetness here and I did, man, it's just that almost nonsense feeling with the journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is nonsense. It's all completely arbitrary. It's a made-up world already inside the girl's head, and
yeah.
and then they the arbitrariness of the things they came up with just.
I'm holding out slight hope that on a second viewing, which I intend to do with this thing, at some point probably this year, I'm hoping I can find a little connective thread with that. I doubt it's there, but I'm hoping.
Yeah. But it's still a really an excellent movie.
Goodness. And we should mention, Richard Kind.
Richard Kind.
His Bing Bong.
Riley's imaginary friend.
Oof.
Lurking around so in our subconscious. Yeah, and I like a lot of the diversions in the subconscious. They've got mm-hmm. the ghost, people who go around forgetting things, who go around throwing memories away, and a running joke about one random TV commercial that keeps popping up.
Yep.
Like, I like the jokes they make about that and the way that our memories work. And we get glimpses into other people's minds too, just for jokes, really, including one of my favorite jokes all year with the boy. She runs into a boy inside the boy's head. Yeah. Did you notice that Riley's emotions were of both genders, but everybody else's emotions were all the gender of the person?
Huh.
Mom's emotions were all female. Dad's were all male. The brief glimpse of the adolescent boy, I think they were all boys. We only got a glimpse.
Adolescent boy, but how adolescent was he?
I mean, he was like her age.
He was? Okay, that's right.
I mean, presumably.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So I don't know if...
That is interesting.
I don't know if that means that Riley is going to have like gender identity issues maybe at some point. Hmm. Or at some point her male emotions are going to turn female. I don't know.
Are you saying Dumbledore is gay?
I am saying that.
Whoa.
Anyway, I give it a B+.
I give it an 8 out of 10.
Terrific movie. It's BS approved. Absolutely.
I mean, listen to us talk. This is how good Pixar is that we can sound slightly down on a movie that we would immediately tell everyone in the world to go see and assume that they will get great enjoyment out of it.
Well, and it's frustrating partly because that middle section that's got all that trouble is like a huge chunk of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was one point where I thought it was over and I was glad and then it wasn't. I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah. But again.
But it's still so good.
Good jokes come out of it, even though it's that thing where it's like, ugh. Just open the door. Like, it's that thing of like, the only thing that feels like it's being separated by is like a door. Just turn the handle, open the door.
Right.
Like, if that's all the obstacle is, just come on.
This whole thing is made up anyway. Just, go back there.
Yeah.
So that's Inside Out, a fine movie from the Pixars.
Indeed.
It's so good. In fact, I might even say that movie is dope.
I can see that.
You know, another movie that's dope.
Overnight?
Dope.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that segue.
Yeah, my bad.
We should have rehearsed
totally,
that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Rehearsal. Sorry.
Dope played at Sundance. Did you see it there?
No. I saw it this week.
All right. I did see it at Sundance, but I didn't write a review. And then allegedly there had been some re-editing and so forth.
Oh.
So I wanted to see it again anyway. And I don't know if anything. I couldn't remember anything.
You couldn't put your finger
on anything. Nothing detectable. And it might be shorter now, or they might just have had the wrong runtime in the Sundance program in the first place. We'll probably never know.
I want to say it was about an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the real runtime is like an hour and 44. At Sundance, it was listed as an hour and 55, and I just don't know if it ever actually was that length or if that was wrong in the Sundance program to begin with, which often happens. I do remember noting at Sundance that it needed to be trimmed, and now I still feel that way.
I feel that way a little bit as well. I know exactly – I know what I would trim, but – I don't know if anybody else would. All right, so here's what we got for this story. We got Malcolm in the middle of this friendship with two other people, and he is a geek. Forrest Whitaker tells us this. He plays the narrator. He tells us this.
The useless narrator, the lazy screenwriter narrator.
He is a geek.
He's also black, a high school senior, lives in Inglewood.
And loves 90s hip-hop culture.
He and his two friends, they're real big on being geeks and loving 90s hip-hop culture. And maybe you're wondering, what does the 90s hip-hop culture have to do with the story, with the movie? And the answer is nothing.
Oh, man.
That's what we call a gimmick. That's an affectation.
Yeah. It was a layer that I liked that it felt like maybe I liked it more than the movie did. or that the movie cared about it. It was, in other words, they didn't bring back enough amazing 90s hip hop and rap. They didn't.
Nor did they make it relevant to the story in any way.
Correct. Except for it to be like one inside conversation and one like bully's desire for his shoes.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
like,
it's
those were two things that like you could immediately point to, but
yeah,
those things could have been achieved in any way.
It's a facet of Malcolm's geekiness, but it is not at all relevant. To me, it feels like pandering. It feels to me like the guy, the writer director of the movie, Rick Fumiyawa, feels to me like he loves 90s hip hop, and he thought he would appeal to other people with that nostalgia by playing it up. And as I recall from the reactions at Sundance, it totally worked.
Yes, that's the thing. I think he will. I think he will overall succeed in making it feel more successful or accessible, whether it actually is or not. Because if you look at it with the movie as a whole, you and I are totally right in the sense of the movie abandons it at times and doesn't have a purpose behind it except for, hey, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But at the same point, if you look at Superbad, which this movie definitely saw Superbad, mm-hmm. Superbad like tossed in some 70s music for the heck of it, and that worked quite well too.
Right, but they didn't. But that movie didn't play it up as being an aspect of the character's personality. It was just sort of soundtrack.
Right. Hence one of the differences. But right. Anyway, it's senior year, and these geeks, they want to go on to bigger and better things. But, you know, Inglewood has his troubles, and sometimes life gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. They get tangled up with a drug dealer named Dom, played by a rapper, A$AP Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a rapper.
Yeah, he looked familiar. There was one other guy that looked familiar, but I couldn't place. But anyway, first of all, I love Malcolm's performance here overall.
He's really good.
Yeah. What is this guy's name? Malcolm's name? What do we got here? Who plays Mel?
Shameik Moore. Shameik Moore is that fellow's name.
Yeah. Very very earnest, very loving, very tender, like, fate. Like, you're rooting for him whether you like it or not. You find, no matter what, you're just like, I'm pulling for this kid.
Yeah, very likable guy.
And his Hispanic friend is okay, is kind of how it felt to me.
do you know where that kid is from?
No.
He was in Tony Revolori is the actor's name, and he was the kid in Grand Budapest Hotel Zero.
Oh my gosh!
Right?
Wow. Yeah, my problem with him is he's an underwritten character who is there for laughs, and they're cheap laughs. And at one point, his character just kind of switches on a dime for the story to go through. I enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed the life that it created. I enjoyed the glimpse into it. I enjoyed the effort of Malcolm and his friends, all of that sort of thing. And I thought there were some surprising twists. I liked also the fact that it talked about the dark web. Because
yeah.
I barely know about the dark web, and pretty much everything the movie said is what I know of the dark web.
Apparently you can sell drugs on it.
You can sell anything on it, from what I understand. One of our friends works in the computer biz, and he's barely talked about the dark web with me. I don't even know if he's seen it or, you know, knows of it, or just
right.
Whatever the case may be. But
the story is fun, as now they've got to sort of outsmart some drug people, and that's all fun. The movie makes, I think, good use of the way that the internet and social media and memes will sort of spread a thing. A little bit of that.
Yeah.
But then
it's all lighthearted until it doesn't want to be.
The whole thing is a little bit sloppy. I mentioned the narrator who's there at the beginning and then shows up once in the middle to fill us in on how they met their white drug friend and then goes away again. And that's how you know a narrator is unnecessary, when he's gone for most of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially near the end, where suddenly Malcolm does like a Spike Lee monologue to us, to the camera, which first makes me think, well, then why not just have Malcolm be the narrator earlier if he's going to do this eventually? And then also that whole thing takes on a tone that has not been the tone of the movie. Like at that point,
100% agree.
The movie decides that it's about racial issues and class and stuff, and it has not been about that up until that point.
And there not only that, it kind of points a finger at the audience, saying like, "Hey, who are you?" And it's like, "Well, wait, where was it? This isn't a Spike Lee joint."
Yeah, there are a couple of nods early on that made me think it was going to be a little bit of a satire about black culture and about white appropriation of black culture. Like, there are jokes early on about things that white people like Donald Glover, which made me laugh.
Made me laugh, too.
And a joke about, not a joke, but a reference to the Bloods having YouTube channel. I was like, yeah, I guess, okay. Talking about, I thought it was going to be about more how things have changed since the 90s. How we've started with this 90s hip-hop thing, and now how has hip-hop and gang and black culture changed since then, and then it's not about that at all, until then at the end for a minute, it acts like it was, that's what it was doing the whole time, and it doesn't make any sense.
It does, however, have two outstanding looking women in this film.
It does.
As an aside, I was, and one of them, I kept going like, wow, I didn't know who it was. And I wrote down in my notes, this is the better version of Lisa Bonet.
Oh.
And guess what?
Huh.
It's Lisa Bonet's daughter.
Oh, well, there you go. Lisa Bonet 2.0.
It's Zoe Kravitz. Lenny Kravitz and Lisa Bonet's kid.
Yeah.
So she's one of them. And then another one who plays Lily. So that's something.
That's true.
It's just two very engaging, beautiful women in this film. The idea with the Molly and the trickery and trying
Molly
to fine-tune.
Molly being the drug, not a girl named Molly.
Yeah, Molly the drug. And the idea of Harvard as a goal. And like, it had that risky business hint to it, and it had that super bad hint to it. But one of the main problems was they didn't know how to get the third act started. So they just kind of did some of the most basic stuff ever, such as this isn't what one character says to another exactly, but it's like this, which is, oh, you're probably going to tell me right now that you know that I killed five people and you're not going to be happy with that. And the other character pretty much being like, what? You right. did that? Mm-hmm. And again, that's just the idea of what this movie does. That actually doesn't occur in this movie. But that was one of the first times where I was like, what are you doing? That is just utterly lazy. And like two or three instances of that happened like right in a row to get that third act started, which is unfortunate. And then again, you're right. That ending is just weird, heavy-handed, and doesn't belong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very strange. It feels like a first film, and it's actually the filmmaker Rick Fumiyawa. It's actually like his fourth film.
I was convinced this was a first film.
Right? It feels like a first film. No,
100% a first film. As in, well, you know what? I'm going to write this guy's name down. I'm going to pay attention to his next stuff because this was pretty engaging, and he got some really good performances and jokes out of this.
He made The Wood back in '99, which was pretty good. Brown Sugar 2002, which wasn't bad. Our Family Wedding 2010, which I can't remember if I saw.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah. That's interesting. His name is Rick Famuyiwa, which strikes me as a Japanese name, but he's an African American fellow. I'm going to look on his bio, see what his deal is.
That doesn't right,
say.
Sir.
Doesn't say. He's 6'4" though. He's a tall man.
Mm.
He's a tall director. Anyway, it's a B-. It's all right.
It's a 7 out of 10 for me. I enjoyed it a hint more, probably because I enjoy. Do I enjoy 90s? Hip hop culture more than you?
I don't know. Okay. Maybe.
Were you a fan of Yo MTV Raps?
No. I mean, I have no strong feelings about 90s hip hop culture.
All right, settle down, Whitey. I'm not pointing a finger.
That's Dope.
And Dope.
The Overnight, which you did see at Sundance.
No.
What?
Wait.
Really?
No. I saw it at South by Southwest.
Oh, the other Sundance. Sundance of the South.
Sundance B.
The Overnight is a very slight film.
When did you see it?
Sundance.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Yes, Sundance. That's right. I remember now. it's a very slight film. It's 80 minutes long. And it's
With credits.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very short film. And it's even as far as like sex farces go, it's a very slight. There's not like there's no message or theme or point or like social commentary, really. It's just for fun, which is all fine. This is an observation, not a complaint. Just,
I think this is totally fine, and I agree. Like, it's one of those weird things where I enjoyed myself, and I'm really happy it was pretty much 75 minutes of viewing pleasure. Like, I didn't need it to be longer.
But there's nothing to this movie.
There's almost nothing.
Almost nothing, movie. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things. There's parallels to my life in this movie.
Oh, so. I noticed that because, yeah, it starts – it's about Adam Scott – and Taylor Schilling have just moved to L.A. Adam Scott is a stay-at-home dad. Doesn't know how he's going to make friends without a job to go to. Mm-hmm. No, I definitely was thinking of you.
And not only that,
I mean, I think of you when I watch all movies, though.
That's sweet. they move from Seattle to L.A. We moved from Portland to San Diego.
That's true. Which is the same, just like shifted down a couple
That's
hours.
Right. So come on, people.
Basically the same. And then he's worried I was going to make friends. Then as luck and screenplay contrivance would have it, they make new friends that very day. Jason Schwartzman and his hot French wife, Judith Godrèche, who I've not seen before. And so they invite them over to the dinner at their home. And so they go to the house, and they're this it's very fancy, sleek, very sort of European house. And Kurt and what's her name, Charlotte. Very sort of glamorous kind of European types, kind of.
Totally. And here's the thing. Attentive parents, attentive entertainers. Everything's great about this couple.
They're like the more cosmopolitan versions of Alex and Emily. They're like the fancier versions. And
yeah, they just got an upgrade.
Yeah, like Kurt is an artist. He paints intimate body parts. And Charlotte models breast pumps for infomercials. And they're very freewheeling and affectionate. And then the other two, the normal people, Adam Scott and Taylor Schilling, they're sometimes amused by them, sometimes alarmed, sometimes awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids go to bed and hilarity ensues.
Alex has some body issues. And let's just say this. Penises are shown.
Not real ones, but yeah.
Nope. Prosthetic penises, but in this movie they are real to the characters.
Well, yes, and there's quite a bit of them.
Rumor has it that Adam Scott once stirred his coffee with Jason Schwartzman's prosthetic penis.
I would believe that. I suppose.
And that was after I saw this at South By. I did. I asked the director a question, and yes, he kept both. Prosthetic penises, and he was very happy that he has those as memoirs from the film.
Good to have props for
the
movie.
It is
that's all. It's this one couple.
It's a fun dirty comedy. I was surprised twice in the third act. If this movie, it had a third act. It just didn't have a second act. So I was surprised twice there.
I liked
a lot of the conversations, a lot of them.
It's really funny, and the Jason Schwartzman is the MVP because he's somewhere like you never he's somewhere somewhere between like an insincere goofball and like a parody of LA hipster parents, but you're not sure how sincere or insincere he is as a character. Then Adam Scott is always good, mostly being there to balance out the weirdness. Taylor Schilling is funny. I don't watch Orange is the New Black, but she's on that, I guess.
You've stated a fact. Taylor Schilling.
I have no frame of reference for her, but I liked her in this a lot.
Yes. For a while, I was like, I don't know. And again, toward the end, she really sold me well.
And the fourth one, the French one, is fine. She seems sort of in over her head with the other three a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Lost.
Just a little.
One thing
again,
that I liked that the film.
What?
It earns its outrageous situations. Like the situations seem to arise naturally out of what's been established about the characters, which it helps to have characters whose primary description is you never know what they're going to do. Because then whatever they do makes sense.
I would say it's one of the few movies where the nudity is 100% warranted.
Well, yeah, no, that's true.
It's
yeah.
needed.
They talk, yeah, it's an issue.
It's not just like a, hey, if we put this in, that'll be a funny joke. It is good stuff.
I liked it a lot.
Totally, I look forward to watching it again. And I assume it's got to be on demand as well, right? This seems tailor made for like on demand.
Taylor Schilling made?
Immediate release. Well played, sir.
Thank you. I'm looking that up.
I'm giving this movie, The Overnight, an 8 out of 10.
I give it a B.
Oh, it was so close.
So close. If only it meant or said or did anything. Like, it's perfectly fine as a waitlist.
Again, didn't you hear me? He moved from Seattle to L.A.
Yeah, I heard you.
He's a stay-at-home. I don't think you understand. All right.
It is apparently not on VOD.
Oh.
You know, it is on VOD, though, that I forgot to mention to you.
What?
Balls Out. Familiar with this movie at all?
No.
It's barely being released. It's mostly VOD. It's in a couple of theaters.
So the balls are barely up.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting thing about this movie. It premiered at Tribeca last year, and it was called Intramural. And it's about an intramural football team? I've got to look at my review to remind myself. A sport. It doesn't matter what sport it is. It's an intramural sport.
Wait a minute. Do you not remember?
I'm pretty sure it's football. But
Can you describe the shape of the ball?
No, I can't.
The color of the ball? That would help, too.
If I could remember that, I would remember what sport it is.
Do you ever remember them using their hands to touch the balls?
It doesn't matter because it was a sport. It doesn't matter what sport.
They're grass.
But now I'm telling you, yes, it was intramural football team.
Okay.
It was either football or soccer. I couldn't remember.
But what are you doing? It's football.
It is football.
Okay.
But in my memory, I knew it was one of those two. Like, okay. I knew it wasn't hockey. Anyway, it was a grass-based sport.
Circle or oval is like keep that in mind for the future.
And so it's intramural team, and there are a lot of laughs you can get out of. Like an underdog comedy about college intramurals. Like, I feel like that has not really been done before.
Agreed. I would enjoy that. I played. One of my greatest sports memories is because of intramural football in college.
There you go. And
okay, I'll tell the story. I'm kidding.
It's about a guy. This is his last year, and he had been on an intramural football team as a freshman, hasn't played since then, so he wants to get the boys back together for one last hurrah. And, of course, there's another team of mean guys and whatever. The whole thing's relatively funny. It's a very loose comedy with lots of small performances by SNL people. Kate McKinnon is in there. Jay Farrow and what's his name? D.C. Pearson, I want to say is his name, are doing play-by-play commentary. For the games, just sitting there without microphones in the empty bleachers, apparently for their own amusement. A lot of it seems kind of it reminded me of Community, the style of humor. Like some of it's sort of meta humor, and some jokes work, some don't. It's kind of satiric sometimes, but mostly just a big broad farce. It's a solid B minus. It's certainly an enjoyable movie. And the thing is, it was called Intramural. And one of the guys involved, I think it was the writer, posted something on his blog about how whoever bought it changed the title to Balls Out. And the posters got like the sexy girl holding the ball.
Ooh.
And there's
sex in it?
No, there's no sex in the movie is the thing.
But this girl, this hot girl's in it?
Yeah. And the writer was talking about how he was somewhat diplomatic about it, but really, yeah, no, Balls Out is a terrible title and it's misleading advertising.
Yeah.
But they do what they can to get people to watch it. So it disregard the title and the poster, and it's a reasonably funny R-rated comedy, and it is on VOD. Balls Out.
Balls Out.
Mm-hmm. Get it? Because they're playing a sport that involves balls.
And they took them out to play them.
I guess, yeah.
I guess
you couldn't play it.
Well, it's also it's a term of you got to try hard.
Mm. Oh, so it works.
We got to go balls
levels.
Out on this game. We got to go balls out.
Right. Right. Interesting. Yeah. I forgot to mention that the main character's best friend is named Grant Rosenfalles. And now he is in a wheelchair because he was in an accident when they played football as a freshman. And he's paralyzed.
Oh, good God. I thought you meant because of the movie. Whew.
No, no. He was paralyzed. Ugh. He's paralyzed from the balls down.
Oh.
I know.
Does he take his balls out?
I don't think so.
Okay, not as I recall. Say, maybe that's where the title.
No. No.
Maybe.
No balls come out in that sense.
All right, all right.
Anyway, there you go. Balls out. It's pretty fun. And that's all the movies.
That's it.
Let's talk about question of the week.
Question of the week. When did you feel strongly with one or both of us about a movie review?
Feel what?
When did you strongly disagree with one or both of us about a movie review? Did I say feel strongly?
You said
disagree?
When did you feel strongly?
Did you feel strongly disagree?
I don't know what you said. It didn't make any sense.
That doesn't work. I'm
now it makes
saying.
Sense.
It's
now,
not a real sense.
Now I understand. I understand everything you've said. We only got a few answers, which leads me to assume that mostly people disagree with us all the time.
Why wouldn't they?
Well, exactly. I mean, we're generally right. Let's be honest there. We're generally right. We need to talk about Kevin. Dan says we need to talk about Kevin. He says, I really disliked it. You might say I vehemently disagree with you both. I understand it was going for a horror movie edge, but attempted to portray the kid as essentially the spawn of Satan. It's exaggerated and surreal nature of his behavior just came off as cartoony and laughable to me. All right, fair enough.
The red stuff. Man.
Oof. That's fair. If it doesn't work. This one surprised me. Brandy says Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
I agree.
I thought everyone liked that movie.
Yeah.
She does acknowledge that all the other critics, it seems, also loved it, but not just us.
Well, now hang on. She says what I said too, though.
What?
One of the weakest villains I've seen in a long time.
Well, but did you still like the movie?
Yes, very much so.
Apparently that was more of a deal breaker for her than it was for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Peter says Bellflower. Which I know is not a movie that...
It is... you're not guaranteed to like Bellflower,
it's
I guess.
It's not for everybody, yeah.
It's not. There's a few on BS Approved where I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You didn't care for it. There's a few. But not this one. A Town Called Panic made this list.
I know, right?
What? I couldn't even stand to watch it in one sitting. Oh, my goodness.
Katya.
Oh, she had to watch the rest in 5-minute chunks over the next week. What? Got ya. That's ridiculous.
A Town Called Panic is pure joy. Pure, unfiltered joy.
Pure, unfiltered Amy Poehler.
No, the other kind of joy.
Oh, all right. A Town Called Panic is great, and it's short, and everybody should see it.
Now, here's what I want to talk about. Big Hero 6.
Wow. People. Do you and I need to watch Big Hero 6 together, Eric?
I don't know if we need to watch it together. I'm certainly willing to watch it again. And I do. I remember.
Wait, why don't you want to watch it with me?
I don't not want to watch it with you. I just don't need to watch it with you.
But at least that way we can turn to each other and be like, mm-hmm. Well, what did you give it? I think I gave it a 5 out of 10.
You liked it less than I did. And I remember from when we talked about it on the show, I remember feeling like you were unusually mean to the audience who did liked it. Like, I remember you going off on a semi rant about, parents who are entertained by anything or whatever. I remember thinking that you made a comment that to me felt uncalled for. So maybe that rubbed some of our listeners the wrong way. Who did like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a few people who said they liked this a lot, and I would definitely give it another chance for sure. Because I gave it like a C+. I didn't strongly dislike it.
And if I remember correctly, what's the cute blow up doll's name?
Baymax.
Baymax. I remember liking almost everything to with Baymax.
Yeah,
but then
Baymax.
Not liking anything else.
And then the end was like a big Avengers movie end.
Yeah, and to me that just wasn't special. So yeah, I'll watch it again. Eric says, not you. Jeff Bear said that the new Annie was better than Into the Woods. And I believe Eric D. Snyder's response was, you're insane.
No, I stand and by it.
Eric agreed with me.
Yeah.
You're insane for thinking that Annie was better than Into the Woods.
However, I stand
Eric,
by it.
Eric also misspelled my last name, which there's been an epidemic of this lately.
Yeah. Can you just – would you mind?
I would mind because here's why. It happened when you asked people to recommend our show to that woman who was writing about podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And people were like, Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, and Snyder with a Y. And I corrected at least one of them anyway. Here's the thing. It's right there in the name of the king show. It's right there in front of you.
But here's the point that people have.
Mm-hmm.
My name has a Y in it.
Right. So I get that. I get how if you're just reciting it from memory, with no frame of reference, that you might
right.
instinctively. But I'm also saying that when you're typing it on a page where it says it 100 times all around you, I'm just saying.
But what would be easier
for
an individual to look at that, or for us to go through and change every reference that we've ever spelled your name correctly, and then choose to start misspelling it? Would be easier?
You think that we should adjust to the people who are doing it wrong?
Yeah, to like the 7 people that can't get
mm-hmm,
it right.
Mm-hmm.
I think – I mean that's – isn't that how the internet works?
I am content to go around – to keep on correcting people one at a time.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
All right.
The Snyders with a Y were the bastard branch of the Snyder family. We cast them off generations ago.
Oh, you know what this is? Okay. Now I understand.
The pretzel people, the Snyders of Hanover, that's them.
If somebody said, do you spell Jeff with a G, I would get pretty annoyed.
Exactly.
I get pretty annoyed.
They wouldn't say, not if someone said, do you spell with a G? If
they
someone
just
spelled it with a G.
You're right.
How would you react?
I'd flip a table.
Exactly. You would.
Yeah.
But it's okay, Eric, other Eric who misspelled my name. I forgive you. Because you spell Eric correctly. Same as me. Tony says, the Lone Ranger. We gave it low grades, as did everyone, again, in our defense.
Right.
He says, I can never understand why there was such a critical piling on for that movie when I and anecdotally anyone else I talked to seemed to really enjoy it. Great adventure with a twist, impeccably shot and put together film, a sufficiently witty script. And yes, that ending is one of the best action sequences in recent memory. I agree. The action sequence at the end was good.
Oh, my gosh.
It was the 3 hours before that that I didn't care for. I don't know that I am willing to give Lone Ranger another try.
And I can't believe that after all of this, he also then insults me.
Oh, yeah.
For loving The Congress, which is just a great movie.
By the way, though,
dusted off the 10 for the whack job thing called The Congress. How dare you, Tony? Tony, here's the thing. You know when you're telling people that you really like The Lone Ranger, and then they're like, yeah, I liked it too. They're being polite. They don't care for the movie. They actually haven't even seen it. I just wanted to let you know that, Tony.
Do you know who this is, by the way, Tony? Tony Fagenson is his name.
Oh.
They're on Facebook. Yeah, do you remember the band Eve 6?
Yeah.
Late 90s, early 2000s. He's their drummer.
Oh.
For reals. Do you remember Eve 6's big hit?
No.
It was called Inside Out.
Give me a little.
I was swallowed the vine, I would choke
on
the
rind,
but the lack thereof was leaving me empty inside. Swallow my doubt, turn it inside out, find nothing but faith in nothing, etc.
Yeah,
anyway, that's their drummer.
Tony, as a way to make up for this hateful thing about The Congress, how could you, man? The Congress is just good. It's like it's the only movie I've bought on iTunes, I think.
Wow.
It's just there sitting on my iTunes whenever I need it. I've only watched it once, but it's there, and that's the point. He should do a new jingle for us. We need a jingle. So that would be his way to atone for all of the
he's the drummer. I don't know that maybe he does other
You can just drum. I'd take a drum solo. Are you kidding me?
Well, I guess maybe, yeah, if it's like a pretty good.
How dare you get choosy?
Usually the jingles have lyrics, and it's hard to do lyrics with just drums. But maybe
there's a great chance that Tony's our most famous listener, so you need to be nice.
Maybe.
Edward.
What did Edward say?
Oh man, Black Hat is the best feature film of the year. So
a lot of people, There was a very vocal minority of people who loved Black Hat. I actually am willing to watch Black Hat again. I'll give that one another chance.
I don't know. I don't think I can.
Several people, but again, and Chris, I don't know Edward. Several of the people who I know of who did like it are people who tend to be just up their own butts anyway, as far as what movies they like. But since I don't know Edward, I'm impartial to his opinions.
We aren't those people, right?
No, you know, just the people who are always like, oh, I love the movie that nobody liked. I didn't like that movie everyone liked.
Yeah.
Those people.
Oh, I noticed you skipped over a certain person's talking about a certain movie.
Oh, no, I didn't skip. No, I was coming back to that.
Please, go right ahead, Eric.
Shirlane, which must be a combination of two people's names, Shirley and Elaine. Two girls named Shirley and Elaine got together, and they said, you guys said that Under the Skin was meh / deserves a rewatch, but you're dead wrong. It's awful! Had no plot, no character, no resolution, and on top of that made absolutely no sense at all, etc. I beg to differ, obviously. But, you know, to each his own. I will say that...
I really let her have it. Whoa, do you want to say sorry?
What?
You really let her have it there, Eric, with what? Both barrels and everything. To each their own?
I know.
Talk to your mother with that mouth?
I stand by that. To each their own. Oof. I will say that objectively speaking, you can't say that a movie does not deserve a rewatch if you have not, in fact, rewatched it. Like, that's the whole point. You don't know until you do whether it did or not. Did you find as people – oh, someone else, Mickey, says he would have seen Tree of Life anyway because of it being nominated for Best Picture, but he didn't enjoy it. That movie was like 8 hours of my life I can't get back. Now, remember, even if you enjoy a movie, you still can't get the hours back. I just want to point that out. Yeah. You don't ever get time back.
Have you watched Tree of Life a second time?
Yeah, I watched it the second time that year when it came out.
I don't think I did.
And I still liked it. It was on my top 10 for that year.
Yeah, that's one of those movies that I think I'll like hold off for as long as possible. Like happily, like, oh, I still can watch that sometime.
Right. Now, do you, as you look at these where people disagreed with us, do any of them raise your hackles? Do you get defensive about any of them? Because I thought about this.
Okay, you go first.
Well, because
I'm trying to think how I want to.
In general, it doesn't particularly bother me if someone doesn't like a movie that I liked. It was a movie I loved a lot. Then I'll be like, oh, come on, really? But it doesn't bother me.
That's how I feel with Tony right now.
It only irks me when people start to impute motives. When they start to say, you only liked it because of this.
Yes.
Or that,
yes.
That irks me. Because and which is why I try to avoid saying things like I try to avoid doing the same thing. I have plenty of theories on why a specific person may have liked or not liked a specific movie, but it's just not polite to say it. You keep that to yourself. You take them at their word that they liked it for the reasons they said, or vice versa.
I think I try to. When I actually talk about it with people, and I try not to because I realize I think I used to do this a little too much where it was just like, really? And then I would just tell them why they're wrong.
Right.
So I've stopped that, but I will definitely ask questions as opposed to assume. I'd be like, well, what about this? Did you like that aspect, or why don't you think that worked for you? And I am curious that way. And normally through that, you can kind of get a hint as far as like, okay. This is why you weren't into it, and maybe you're not saying it, but that's fine.
And yeah, and of course, obviously,
you don't like super creative, wonderful things, Tony. maybe I don't know. I'm kidding. I just really like the Congress. I really do.
I know. But and then it's different when if it's something I didn't like that they did like, and they're telling me that they liked it a lot. Then I try to have an open mind and be like, oh, well, this person found something in the movie that I didn't. I don't think this person is making it up. Like, how can I see that? How can I get out of it what that person did? I'm open to that possibility, which is why I'll watch Big Hero 6 again. I don't know about Lone Ranger, though. I'm sorry. Oh, Lone Ranger.
It's just long.
It's so long. And really not enough people liked it to make it worth rewatching. there wasn't really a big divide there.
No, there definitely not, was not.
But I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, it's nice to remember that we can all watch the same works of art and come away with totally different interpretations and
feelings. But there's normally a right answer. Like we should say, right? That's what you wanted to
obviously,
end with?
Obviously what we say on the show is the right answer, yes.
Yeah.
But we are tolerant of other people's opinions as well, generally. Oh, I forgot one. We got an email from Ken. Ken said, True Grit. True Grit!
What?
Said he and his wife got the disc from Netflix, settled in for a fine evening of movie watching, except for the part where neither of us really got into it. Just wasn't holding us well. They, let's see, about halfway through, and they quit and then watched some more later. And yeah, it did. It was not their cup of tea.
Well, I heard they're going through some stuff, though, so that's probably why.
No, it's such a jerk.
It's probably them. It's their fault.
Their fault, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is their fault for not liking True Grit. It's definitively good. It's not my fault.
Clearly.
It's a really good movie. Man, Matt Damon's really good in that limited role.
Matt Damon and True Grit? I don't remember at all. It's like 5 years ago that movie came out.
It's true. Yeah, but what's occupied?
What?
Oh, really?
It's one of your favorite lines from that movie. The Jinx is occupied. I remember that.
Yeah. Question of the week for next week.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, can you take this away? Because my page won't load properly.
If I know
what I want to give credit. That's the reason.
Yes, one of our listeners suggested
question of the week. And by the way, you can always send in a suggestion for the question of the week. In fact, you should. You should always be doing
that. Yeah, if something occurs to you, this would be a good discussion topic for the show.
Stop what you're doing.
For the boys.
Tell that person to just be quiet. Shut up for just a second. I've got to send this Facebook message or email or say it on Twitter before it escapes my memory. That's what you need to say. Mm-hmm.
Patty suggested, have you ever dreamt about a movie? Describe your best or worst movie dream. Dreamt about a movie. And I guess we'll say this can be a dream about a real movie. And I think we should also allow dreams about movies that don't exist, but that were, you know, if you dreamed about a movie that doesn't exist, that will count too. Hmm. It does not have to be a real movie that you dreamed about. Have you ever had that? I feel like I've had dreams where I dreamed about a movie that I saw a movie that's not a real movie, but
yes.
Anyway.
But you felt like it was a movie like when you woke up
in the dream. Yeah. Right. Anyway, yeah. Tell us your best or worst movie dream. We got to talk about the box office challenge. There have been developments. Been some new developments in the box office challenge.
Are we ready for the question of the week? Let's do the question.
No, we did that actually just now. We just finished that part of the show.
Okay, well then.
Now you may recall when last we left you.
Talk about something else.
Only one of Jeff's movies had opened, but it was Avengers: Age of Ultron. Made $191 million, huge opening, giving him seemingly an insurmountable lead. And now I've had eight of my movies open, the most recent of which was Jurassic World, which made there was no way it was going to make more than Avengers: Age of Ultron. That was impossible. $191 million. No one's beaten that. You know, just like a month after Age of Ultron did it. And then somehow Jurassic World made almost $209 million.
Yeah.
New record for the best opening weekend ever.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to gloat because there's no way I saw that coming. There's no way I foretold that. I mean, I knew it would do well. I figured $100 million.
Right. And I had it pegged for anywhere from like $80 to $120 million. It was that huge of a range. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if people want to see it.
$208 million. And so suddenly things have changed. Now this is the situation. I still have two movies left, Ant-Man and Pixels.
Yeah.
Pixels might be a flop. I'm prepared for that.
I don't know. It's getting heavy advertising.
That's the thing. I won't be surprised either way. Ant-Man is a Marvel film, and Marvel has already demonstrated that they can slap the Marvel name on anything with Guardians of the Galaxy. Whether people know the property or not, people will go see it because it says Marvel on it. I looked it up. The lowest opening weekend for a Marvel film
What?
Was The Incredible Hulk in 2008, and it was $55 million. And and Hulk was like a different situation because we already had a Hulk movie and stuff.
Ooh.
The average opening weekend for a Marvel movie was like $100 million, like averaging them all.
Oh, boy.
So Ant-Man could be big. And here's the thing. I did the math here. Even if Ant-Man and Pixels both make $0, let's say they open and literally not one person goes to see either movie. So my total score is exactly where it is right now.
Yeah.
Your remaining nine movies need to make an average of like $31
million. Yeah.
And that's if Ant-Man and Pixels make zero. So it's going to be close is what I'm saying. Because you've got Minions and Inside Out, which are both going to be huge.
Well, this is one thing that we need to realize. When we say they're going to be huge,
yeah,
the run of the film will be huge.
Well,
opening
yeah.
weekend with animated movies isn't necessarily the
that's
end
true.
All be all, because typically what you don't get are the teenagers.
True, the animated
and that's
movies.
That's normally what pushes a movie's opening weekend.
Animated tend to have longer legs. That is true.
I was really happy with the idea that Minions and Inside Out could both do, you know, like $50 million, and I'd mm-hmm. be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the case anymore
because
they can't do that.
Because here's what you also – and you've got some others that could be big hits. But you've
– Yeah.
But you've got Trainwreck, which is going to be a train wreck. That's going to make no money. $0.
Yeah.
Vacation might have long legs but opens on a Wednesday. Your Terminator and your Magic Mike, both Wednesday openings.
Yeah.
It is very much anyone's game. Well, not anyone's game. It's either my game or yours.
Now, Jurassic World made $18 million on Thursday.
Yeah.
And you get that $18 million is what you're saying.
Just as you got the like $20 million that Age of Ultron made. And here's why. Because I have not been able to find a site that breaks it down.
Okay.
They're counting all Thursday screenings, including Thursday midnights, which we do want to count. We don't want to exclude
right.
Thursday
that
midnights.
That is true. You're
and
right.
I can't – nobody's breaking it down between Thursday evening and Thursday midnights. And so we're just counting everything that's on Thursday.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
That's just – yeah, that's how we have to do
it. All right.
It.
Out of my movies, I wonder if Mission Impossible is going to be the highest out of my remaining. I wonder if that'll actually beat both Minions and Inside Out.
I'm worried about Minions because the two Despicable Me's were very popular.
Yeah, but Despicable Me 2, I'm going to say that opening was like $54
million. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I mean, but it might build on it. Sometimes those sequels, like Pitch Perfect 2, had a much bigger opening than the first one did.
And who doesn't think that the Minions are the best part of those
movies?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it could still very much. Despicable Me 2 opened to $83
million.
Oh. you had that 2 years ago.
I was way off.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think Minions could be very huge.
Yeah. Man, it'd be really nice if Ted 2 could make $30 million for me.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I don't think you should hold your breath. That's the one I'm calling. Ted 2 is going to tank. I feel it in my bones. I just feel like the moment is past. It feels like the Seth MacFarlane thing is over and that kind of humor is over or something.
So what do you think that's going to open at? Like $20
million? Something like
that. $10
million? Yeah. Like $20 million, I guess. I'm not good at guessing like specific figures. I'm thinking in general. In general, it is going to be a disappointment.
Is it going to be worse than Poltergeist?
Probably not. Okay. No, it won't be worse than Poltergeist.
All right.
Well, oh no, Poltergeist made $22 million. It might be. Maybe.
Isn't that weird? Because if you release Poltergeist at a different time of year, never mind. Because then it wouldn't make more people are just going to the theater. Because $22 million is not a bad opening.
No, it's a perfectly good opening. It's just not great for
it's
a contest
summer.
Where you're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a big summer opening.
For our purposes, it was not,
yeah.
not big.
Yeah, it looks as though I will be waiting all the way until Fantastic Four on August 7th. And, man,
I
hope
it doesn't
come
last
down
one?
To that. I hope it doesn't come down to that overperforming.
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's your last one. So it'll, that's right. That'll come down to, we'll know at that point exactly, because mine will all be out.
Right.
So we'll know how much that has to make for you.
Yeah. You will have, Pixels will come out, and then I will still have three remaining. Vacation, Mission Impossible, and Fantastic Four.
Right.
All coming out in that order.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, really, it's a close ball game.
It's weird because I just have one movie out. Like I need. Thankfully, Inside Out will come out, and now we'll get the ball rolling with me.
Mm-hmm. Unless nobody goes to see it because they're all seeing Jurassic World still. Jurassic World, that often happens after a big opening, a giant opening weekend like that. It dominates.
Then
for
suddenly
a couple
everybody's
weeks.
Like, "Oh, I have to go see it."
All the people who didn't see it the first week. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I expect like Jurassic World will probably make like $12 million this weekend. And,
probably. That's probably
Inside
right.
Out will make 209.
Probably. Yeah, probably set a new record.
That would be all of this talk would immediately just somebody would like if they didn't listen to the podcast this weekend. This would just be insane talk if like Inside Out did just break records, which it won't.
No, probably not. It won't. So yeah, got us a good horse race here.
And there's nothing I could do.
Well, there's nothing anyone can do.
But I'm just saying, like, I didn't have access to Jurassic World because Avengers was the more logical choice.
Right. Yeah, no, you couldn't. Yeah, you couldn't have.
I'm just saying it's not my fault if I lose. So far. It might be my fault later, but so far.
I think the listeners would rather see you lose than me.
Well, I liked my position of gloating.
Well, and I think that's why people would like to see you lose.
Yes, and I chose to do that, knowing that it would be fun for me to be a villain. I allowed people to see me as a villain. So really, I still won in a way. Everybody's still under my control.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Good point, Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. Thank you. Wait, was that a... hey, what'd you watch?
Hey, Weird Science. Remember that movie?
What? Yes.
Yeah, watch.
Are you doing one of those things?
A list of facts. And I had seen Weird Science before many years ago. Didn't remember much about it, just the basics. Weird Science is, I'm going to make a bold statement here, Weird Science is a crappy movie. That is not a good movie. It's
well,
not
but
funny.
Everything, at least, everything makes sense, though. Everything is definitely based in science. Well, like even, those guys on motorcycles at the end.
You know, even apart from that, the thing that struck me about Weird Science is how, especially for being a John Hughes movie, who's all about like real teenage angst and stuff, nobody reacts to anything the way that real people react to anything. Let me give you an example. The very first scene, the two nerd boys are there watching the girls in the gym, and two other boys, Robert Downey Jr., who's just credited as Robert Downey in the credits. He and the other guy come and pants them. They pants the boys.
Yep.
And then what happens is the boys stand there, stone, frozen solid. The girls all look at them, dead silent. Then after several seconds, the boys pull up their pants and run away. And none of that is what happens. In real life, the girls would be laughing or whatever. The boys would immediately cover themselves. And the whole movie is people having reactions like that that are not authentic reactions to things.
Okay, so it's baffling. Tell me again exactly how it happened when this happened to you. tell me I have to be right. This is a guaranteed right. When Anthony Michael Hall is an old African-American talking about the blues.
Oh, man.
It's still amazing, right?
I was shocked that was allowed.
Are you saying that couldn't exist in a movie that comes out today?
Saying it probably would not happen today. And again, nor does it make any sense even within the context of the movie with that character or anything else. None of that. He does a good job with the voice. I'll give him that.
So good.
Great job with the old black man voice, but but yeah. And the whole creepy thing where they make a woman and then like she belongs to them, and these are like 16-year-old kids, they're underage, and they're presumably the ones having the sex with her. It's sort of implied anyway.
It's implied.
Very odd movie and not a good one. But again, if it turns kids on to science, well, then that's all right.
Chet. Oh, Chet.
What'd you watch?
I watched F for Fake. Have you ever seen this movie? Do you know what it's about?
I know what it is. It's the Orson Welles thing.
It's an Orson Welles
joint.
Pretty much documentary.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I know it's about fraud.
Yeah, he explores an art forger. And this is going to be my film for remedial film school. So I'll talk perhaps a little bit more about it next week. But it's entertaining, but it's one of those prepare yourselves, people. If you wanted to see this movie, you would have to pay to rent it.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
No, it's true. You would have to go to iTunes or Amazon and give them money to see this movie. Yeah. Not on a monthly basis either. Like just one time.
Wow. Weird.
Yeah.
What is this world coming to?
$3 or $4.
I'm curious to see that. I would like to see it. Not if I had to pay for it, though. Come on.
Yep. $3 or $4. Good luck.
Get out of here with
Orson Welles. Oh, man. That guy. I don't know if I still can, but I would like to party with that guy.
Well, you can't because he's dead.
Ah.
He was certainly quite the raconteur and the yeah.
He can wear a cape. Mm-hmm. Can you wear a cape?
I bet I could look better in it now than he does.
Right now, as in dead Orson Welles versus you in a cape?
Yeah.
But I think more people would want to see.
You think the decomposed corpse of Orson Welles would look better in a cape than me?
People would want to see him more, but I guess the question
that's not the same as looking better at it, though.
Who would look better as in, like, who would you want to hook up with?
Yeah.
Or, like, what do you say?
Who would look better, more stylish, more appealing to look at? Me or the decomposed corpse of Orson Welles?
He's thinner than you now. So he's got that.
I don't know. He was really fat, and he's only been dead, like, 30 years. I don't know how long that takes to all go away.
Maybe rewatch Weird Science and you'll figure out the results in there. Because it's all based in science.
Yeah, that's actually – Weird Science is how Neil deGrasse Tyson got his start from that movie. It inspired him to go into science.
One of the first PG-13 movies my dad took me to. Not a good call, Dad. Although I did enjoy it quite a bit at the time.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed it on rewatching. But I'm not saying it's a good movie. I'm not going that far.
Like I said before, to each their own.
Man.
Ugh. Yeah.
You got a bar of soap in there? You better.
All right.
That's it.
Yeah, we're done. Inside Out is really good. You should go see it.
It's really good.
It's not perfect.
And maybe really now good. That you've heard us, you'll be like, well, you guys were too hard on it.
That'll be a good thing. We've tempered
that'll make
your expectations.
You happier.
Yeah, yeah. Dope is pretty good. Worth seeing.
That's good. That's good.
And The Overnight is pretty funny.
I think so.
Pretty funny.
Do you like to laugh?
Does make you laugh. The Overnight and Dope.
No, wait. I'm asking you.
Yes,
you
I do like to laugh. You've heard me laugh many times. Well, I enjoy it.
I was checking in. When's the last time I asked you if you liked to laugh?
You don't need to because I'm always laughing all the time. So I clearly do like to laugh.
Sometimes he doesn't laugh at my jokes.
Well, sometimes your jokes are stupid. You see my point.
From moving BS from Burns.
See, I laughed just there.
Yeah.
The Overnight and Dope are, by the way, are both super filthy. In case that wasn't clear before.
Yeah, both absolutely deserve their R rating.
Yes.
For different reasons.
Make no mistake. And then question of the week, tell us, have you ever dreamt about a movie? Tell us your best or worst movie dream. You can email us, moviebspdx@gmail.com. Or you can post it on Facebook. That's where stuff is.
Yeah.
And
you can find stuff at moviebs.com. That's us. We own it. It's no big deal.
Yeah, no, we bought that domain name.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah, not at all. And so that's it. Until next week. For Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.
The gates are occupied.
I know it is occupied, Mr. Cogburn. As I said, I have business with you.
I have prior business.
You have been at it for quite some time, Mr. Cogburn.
There is no clock on my business. The hell with you. How did you stalk me here?
The sheriff told me to look in the saloon. In the saloon, they referred me here. We must talk.
Women ain't allowed in the saloon.
I was not there as a customer. I am 14 years old.
The Jakes is occupied. We'll be for some time.